Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we discuss the Masters hangover and have a chat with CBS's Amanda Baliones.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have one if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers. Today I'm joined by Sam Wyman, Keely Levins. Guys, I don't know about you, but it was a little tough to get into the golf this week following that Tiger Woods win at the Masters. And that's why, you know, we're going to talk to Amanda Baliones later from CBS. I'm impressed with all those people. I mean, they're pros, obviously. They're getting paid to do it. But, they covered the heck out of that event at Hilton Head, the RBC Heritage. Even though, again, we're all still talking about Tiger Woods.
Well, never mind, meet people in the media. Imagine being a player.
Oh,
and you have, and never mind the fact that it was Tiger Woods winning the Masters in the way that he did. Just the emotion and the stress of competing in a major championship to then turn around and go to Hilton Head. I think that's one of the reasons guys love playing in Hilton Head is because it is such a great change of pace from the stress of the week before. But you're right, it doesn't have nearly the same level of urgency or importance that – others have.
And it's a great course. It's a course that everybody likes for the most part on tour. And you mentioned the guys. I was amazed, like a Dustin Johnson. He misses winning the green jacket by a stroke. Dueling down the stretch, obviously the roars, Tiger. He goes to this tournament, and he's leading through 54 holes. Now, we'll get to what happened on the backstretch there. But I was impressed that, he even goes. I know he has an RBC on his neck, a little logo there. That's probably a lot to do with it. But, like, Francesco Molinari was there. I think he missed the cut. Some other guys were there. Brooks Koepka was not there. He was on a tropical island with his girlfriend. But Keely, I don't know. What do you think? Like, how do these guys get back into the, hunt like that? And it's just – that's what they do?
I was very impressed with – DJ especially. Like, I know we're gonna go into his final round, but I mean the emotional exhaustion, the physical exhaustion from a major is so extreme. And like, we were even talking about Tiger and what's it gonna take for him to get ready for Bethpage, which was 5 weeks away from the Masters, let alone like having to tee it up again 4 days after finishing the final round. I thought it was really impressive, which is why, like, I personally didn't have a problem with Dustin's quote-unquote blow-up during the final round.
Okay, we'll talk about Dustin. He had the 54-hole lead. He gets to the back nine. He's still tied for the lead. Let's be honest, it's not the same caliber leaderboard that we saw at Augusta National the week before. He has a five-hole stretch where he goes bogey, 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 double bogey, double bogey. He ends up birdieing the 18th hole just to finish in the top 30. Sam, this is not the first time we've seen this. We saw a couple years ago, he blew a 6-shot lead going into the final round against Justin Rose at the HSBC. And just last month at the Valspar, he shot a 74, again against a really weak leaderboard, to not get the job done. I know he's number one in the world, but are you at all concerned?
I'm concerned. I mean, I guess anytime you have those kind of major blips on your card or in contention, it's definitely a worrying sign. I mean, he's had, as we've talked about ad nauseum, some noted meltdowns at majors. I wouldn't use the word meltdowns. I would say near misses are coming up short.
Like,
maybe
blips,
obviously,
like,
I mean, Pebble Beach in his first go around 2010 was a meltdown.
Yeah.
Everyone else is kind of a few kind of mistakes at the worst possible time have cost him. But if you want to look at a reason why this guy is, a dominant player most weeks of the year and not converting in major championships, you have to look at his ability to sustain it over 72 holes.
Mm-hmm.
And, I give him a little bit of a pass for the reasons we just described this week, just because I think, I don't know if I can use this phrase on our podcast, but like, your give a shit meter is kind of at a low, even when you're in contention. When you're Dustin Johnson contending for a Masters and you have a chance to win Hilton Head, no disrespect to the RBC Heritage, it's just hard to sustain the same level of urgency or interest.
No, that's why it was impressive for the first 63 holes.
But
But when things go south on you, and then you kind of, again, I'm not projecting what he was thinking, but it's just hard to sustain the same level of fight in you.
Yeah, and some of the shots were stunning. What I don't get, and I'm probably about as guilty as anyone, because, again, we kind of just said, well, he's had these weird things happen to him. Well, oh, yeah, he did shoot the 80 at Pebble Beach. He has this reputation as being this unflappable player, but he has one major. He now has blown some regular tournaments down the stretch. It seems like we give him more of a pass. I mean, even back to Shinnecock last year, it wasn't a final round gag, but he had a four-shot lead going into Saturday, shot the 77 there. I know it was tough conditions, but, you know, he's thrown away a lot of big tournaments. Why do we think of him in the same breath as, like, as Brooks, you know, and we don't label him ever as a choker, Dustin? At least I don't. I don't really see people doing that.
I don't think of him as a choker, and I think
But why? He's thrown away as many big tournaments as anybody, probably.
I don't really agree with that, though. I mean, I think that there definitely have been some, like, horrible moments that's just like, wow, he absolutely should have won that, and he mm-hmm. didn't. But he's also, like, just gotten beat.
No, he has. Yeah, sure.
You know, like, not all of them have been his fault, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The other way of looking at it is, you know, something we always go back to is that, you know, is he blowing opportunities, or is he giving himself opportunities on weeks when lesser players aren't even sniffing contention? So he's mm-hmm. putting himself in position based on the fact that he's just a superior player, and he doesn't get it done, so we consider it a meltdown. Whereas, you know, player X who you don't even notice because he never makes a climb up the leaderboard,
and
never puts
contention.
Himself into 40th place or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. But I think it's also the way he just carries himself. He's so calm. So he looks calm. So
right.
we think of him as this calm, unflappable
right.
guy. And Brooks Koepka's the same way. You don't see him celebrating the highs or getting down on the lows. And mm-hmm. And you know, obviously other guys, you see more reactions from them. I think he's great. I think he should have more than one major. He's definitely
Absolutely.
Gotten screwed a couple times by the golf gods, by whatever. But he's not as unflappable as people think. That's all I'm
But I think it is a testament to his unflappability that he can take hits like he's taken and then get himself
back
into position to maybe take another
that's
hit.
That's where he's unflappable.
That's true.
He doesn't
that's
dwell
amazing.
On moments.
Yes.
He doesn't
that's,
dwell in the, the fact that he
Definitely.
Blew up on Sunday.
Yeah.
It won't even be a discussion point next time he tees it up.
Right, and that would kill someone else.
Right.
Like, it would
right.
end their career.
Right. Well, all right, another guy who, again, isn't even really putting himself in the hunt. Actually, I shouldn't say that. He's kind of putting himself in the hunt through 2 days. I think if you look at maybe his 10 stroke play events this year, he's kind of been in the hunt going into the weekend, and he was again this week. And you're thinking there's no pressure on him this week. Jordan Spieth, I'm talking about, of course. It's the week after the Masters. Everyone's talking about Tiger. It's at Hilton Head. The field isn't great. I think he was playing with Ryan Palmer, who's one of his best friends, on Saturday. And he goes out there and shoots a 76 or something, tumbles completely off the board. I think he was fifth place going into the weekend. He finishes T54. This is getting really scary, I think. I know he's only 25. I know he's got plenty of time to figure it out. But you have to be concerned with what you're seeing from Jordan Spieth, especially this trend of play well for a couple days and then completely crap on the weekend.
Yeah, I think that that's the most confusing part of it, is that we've seen enough flashes of, you know, the old Jordan Spieth that you're like, oh, he's figured it out. He's there. And then the next round will be just, it seems like it comes out of nowhere.
Well, would you say that's more troubling than if he was just completely lost
completely
for four
lost.
Rounds? I mean, you know, like when David Duval or someone had these.
No, that's a good point.
I mean,
guess you'd rather see a guy make cuts.
100%.
Than, yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Because then I feel like you don't know, like, in this situation, it's like you have no idea what the problem is. Whereas if you're just straight up missing cuts, everything's
right.
wrong, then it's like, okay, we can find the issue, we can go in, we can fix it, and then you'll be better.
Yeah, but that's a pretty dark tunnel to go down. I mean, you mm-hmm. saw guys who've lost their games, and
mm-hmm.
there's no guarantee you're going to find your way out of it. Like, this
sure.
this feels like something that's like an adjustment. It's a slight fix. I mean, it's obviously, you know, he's making mistakes at the worst possible time, and it's costing him. These are not, you know, this is not overhaul your
right.
swing, overhaul everything, fire your whole team around you. I don't think he's, I mean, come on, the guy still won three major championships,
yeah.
25. Man, and golf's hard. I mean, I feel like I'm a Jordan Spieth apologist,
no.
but I feel like that's the thing, is like, these are, this is quote-unquote worrying based on his standard, but based on a lot of other players, it's just kind of the normal ebbs and flows of a career.
Yes, but even like when Rory went through his couple slumps, or when Tiger's – well, Tiger, it's a joke. I mean, Tiger's slumps are – you know, he's finishing top 10 instead of winning. But Rory even – he wasn't ranked 142nd in the FedEx Cup 60% of the way through the series. Mm-hmm. You know, and Spieth is getting killed by these huge numbers – and he, I think he ranks 202nd right now in strokes gained off the tee. So right off the bat, he's basically the worst driver on tour. And a couple of those drives every round are resulting in double bogeys or triple bogeys. It just – we've seen the wild tee shots from before, obviously most notably at Birkdale. He saved mm-hmm. that bogey, and that helped propel him to that his last win at the 2017 Open. But, man, some of these shots are tough to watch. And again, he's 43rd in first round scoring average. He's third in second round scoring average, and then he drops to 196th in the third round and 204th in the fourth round. So
it's so pretty interesting.
Pretty
it wild. Like it makes you want to. I mean, it makes me want to look at it from like a fitness standpoint. Yeah. Even you know, like maybe there's
headline. Keely Levin says Jordan Spieth woefully out of shape.
No,
I love it.
No, not at all. But like,
married Jordan Spieth gives up on his fitness.
Yeah, letting himself go.
No, I mean we all not us particularly.
I mean, you said the same about Adam Scott. Too.
But
right,
this is just gonna
dad bod Adam is Scott.
Absolutely not. This is gonna take a turn. Adam Scott, it's not true. I support you wholeheartedly. No, I think that, like, if it is so obviously a weekend thing, like, how could you not look at it from, like, a strength and an aerobic lens? If I was his trainer, I would be looking at that. But
yeah, I mean, there's some, like, whatever you want to call it, it's the ability to sustain your best golf and ward off all of your worst habits.
Right.
You know, that's what we're talking about. So is it mental? Is it a physical fatigue factor? You know, it's obviously like his inability to avoid the big miss off the tee, which is putting him in all kinds of dangerous spots. It's all of those things. I'm just saying, like, it doesn't seem to me like a fundamental inability to swing a golf club.
Right.
It's something like a little more subtle than that.
Well, yeah, I said something on Twitter. I got a lot of feedback, mostly people agreeing. But if you said after Jordan Spieth won the 2017 British Open that by April 2019, Tiger Woods would be arguably the best player in the world, and Jordan Spieth would be a run-of-the-mill player. In the last 12 months, he has done nothing, not one top 10. You would be, I mean,
of course,
your mind
course.
Would be blown.
But mostly because of the first part, but the second one's almost, almost
well,
as
25-year-old with three majors in his
sure.
Part. Anyway, he'll be back. I think we all agree on that. All right, let's just briefly talk at least about the guy who did win the tournament, CT Pan. And it's funny because, you know, when you're a former world number one amateur player, you kind of expect to win on tour eventually. But that, you know, it's been 5 or 6 years as a pro. He obviously had a close call last year at the Wyndham, but he finally breaks through here. You know, it's obviously any win is big for a guy, mm-hmm. guy's confidence, but for, you know, for a guy who was used to being this, you know, college star and world amateur ranked number one, you know, how big is it to finally get that win and
yeah, it's just
propel?
Like, I think it's validation. That's obviously such a hard transition going from collegiate golf to golf on tour. Like it's a very different experience, and we've seen a lot of people struggle with that. And so just to have that, you know, affirmation that okay, I can do this, like I am a good player, I do know how to win, and I can convert it out mm-hmm. here as well, I think it's huge. And I think, I mean, obviously it's tough when you're like looking at Dustin Johnson could win and you're kind of like looking forward to a DJ win. It is tough when someone else wins, but I think he was very entertaining, and like, you know, a lot of the little things with his wife, like giving him shit, like I thought
it
was pretty good.
It's funny you bring the wife up, because we asked Amanda Balionis about this. That was that really funny interview last year when his wife Michelle was caddying for him, and he kind of threw her under the bus. He said basically she doesn't do anything for him. So she actually kind of gave him the kick in the pants this time. They were watching the Masters, and she basically said, come on, like, I'm not getting any younger here. Like, let's get to Augusta already. And so he wins. He goes out and wins. And now she'll be caddying for him at the par three next year. That was pretty good. Sam, what did you think about
this? Well, I mean, it's just funny how we started the show talking about how it's hard to get excited about the RBC heritage and hard to maintain the same. Well, think about how big it is for someone like that. You know, this is, you know, for and especially when you're coming off an amateur career and there's a certain level of expectation about eventually getting that win. This is, like Keeley's word, this is validation that you can win, that you can compete at this level. It takes a huge question mark away. There's a level of, obviously, job security that's allowed. You know, you hear about guys getting to that next level because they are able to relax and play. Of course, you also hear stories about guys sort of getting a little bit complacent because they win. But I'm just saying, like, it just underscores the fact that in a lot of ways, and we've had this discussion before on this podcast, that as much as it's fun to see Jordan Spieth or Dustin Johnson win because they're household names, a win like this means so much more and so much more impactful on someone when it's someone like CT Bay.
Definitely. I do want to mention John Strege for us wrote a column, and it drew the ire of Billy Hurley III, among others, for this quote. The tournament was won by CT Pan, a 5'6" package of professional mediocrity prior to winning. Billy Hurley III did not take kindly to that, neither did some other guys. You know, I think John explained where he was coming from. I think if he had just said PGA Tour mediocrity, that would have been totally fine, because I don't know how you could argue not, especially in 2019, right. He had 9 previous starts. His best finish was T42.
Right.
I mean, that's the definition of mediocrity. But professional mediocrity, it's still, you know, this guy, if you're on tour with your card, you're obviously
in the top
cream of the crop.
0.001% of what you do in the world.
But so, you know, a guy like Billy Hurley, who's a similar type player, you know, maybe, you know, a journeyman, wins once or twice in his career. Anyway, I thought that was funny.
That's awesome.
Another guy, though, just before we get to our talk with Amanda, I did want to mention Matt Kuchar is not only number one in the FedEx Cup points list, he's like way ahead.
I know.
He finished runner-up again. Since this whole L2 Can tipping thing, I mean, his career is back. Incredible run by
him.
He finished in the top 10 or the top 5 every week, and he's actually won twice
this
season.
How is he able to, like, play golf? I would be so broken after this caddy, I'm amazed at his mental fortitude.
You're assuming that he's having this, you know, deep level introspection about what happened. I think in his mind, he did. I mean, or he says he did.
Sure.
He's resolved it. He feels better about it. And I think, you know, one of the things about being a professional athlete is you're pretty damn good at compartmentalizing.
Yes.
You know, you have kind of like what you should think about certain things and when you're able to compete. And on whatever level, maybe it's in some strange way, it's freed him up. Like, you know, you know what's stressful? Stressful is not trying to make a cut on the PGA Tour. Stressful is when everyone is ripping you on social media and elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So you never know what is sort of motivating him, but it's hard to disagree with the results for him.
Yeah, and I will agree with Keeley on that, though. When this story started to break, it was during that Sony Open. And he, you know, he was confronted on that Saturday.
Yeah.
He still went out there and won. That was amazing.
It's crazy.
That with all this rumors and, you know, there aren't many golfer controversies. That was impressive. You're right, Sam. Great compartmentalization. What did I say?
Compartmentalization?
Compartmentalization.
There you go. For 500?
Yes. All right. Speaking of someone who can speak a lot better than me, obviously, in front of the camera, Amanda Baliones was kind enough to join us. She's in the midst of a really busy schedule. We mentioned the Masters. You know, she was at Hilton Head. She'll be at the Zurich Classic this week for the team event, which we'll talk about a little more later. Please listen to our chat with CBS's Amanda Baliones.
Before we go on, let me talk for a second about Golf Digest Schools. Golf Digest Schools is our new cutting-edge video instruction platform, offering more than 250 classes on every part of the game and featuring the leading teachers in golf, from Butch Harmon to David Ledbetter to Michael Breed. Unlike the quick tips you can find across the internet, these are full game improvement programs meant to be followed step by step as if you were working with a pro. It's like Masterclass meets Netflix, but even better because there's the added promise of feedback. Sign up for Golf Digest Schools. Go to golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS to get 30% off an annual subscription. Again, golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS. Okay, very happy to have joining us on the podcast for the first time, CBS's Amanda Baliones. Amanda, good afternoon.
Hello.
Well, I guess I should say good morning because I mentioned you before. I messed up the time that we were supposed to speak, and I said that I don't really understand how time zones work, so I apologize.
My body never knows what time zone I'm in either, so it's okay.
And the other reason is that I think we're all still kind of reeling, if that's the word, from a week and a half back at Augusta, the Masters. I'm just curious from your perspective, certainly from ours, it was such a momentous event. What was it like for you leading into Sunday and that Sunday itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was how everyone else experienced it. You just, it was incredible. You know, we had such an amazing leaderboard the entire week. And that's just what I kept hearing all around me. And what I kept thinking was every time you looked at the leaderboard, you're like, man, this is exactly what a major should be. This is what you always dream of, the Masters, you know, kind of setting up to look like, with the biggest names and the best competitors, you know, all at the top. And it just, it was just, to me, it was perfect from start to finish, you know, just everyone that was, the way everyone was playing, everyone felt like they were at the top of their game, you know, coming in, it came down to the wire. I just thought it was awesome. It was, yeah, the excitement was at a 10 the entire week, I would say.
How much did the early start affect, you know, things on your end? You know, that early, I'm assuming you had an earlier wake up call and all that, but how, you know, was it tougher? Was it easier? You know, how did that work out?
You know, I think it's kind of business as usual. You just do, you know, we do what all of us are here to do. We just did it at an earlier time. And it definitely, for our technical crew, our production guys, you know, at any major week, it's a long week. You know, you're getting up at, you know, 6 a.m, 5 a.m. I think, you know, I had friends that were getting up at 4:45 in the morning, you know, pretty much every day. So they just had to keep doing that. And I think that those are, like, to me, the technical and production staff, the people that you don't see behind the scenes, like, they are they're the real heroes of all of this, because without them, none of this would be possible, you know, and they're putting in way longer hours than I think anyone really realizes. So for myself, I mean, yeah, I had to get up a couple hours earlier, but it was nothing compared to what everyone behind the scenes had to do to make sure that we were ready to go and to put on a broadcast that I think we're all really proud of.
So you started at CBS in 2017. If I had said to you, mm-hmm. by the way, one of the things you're going to be doing while you're here is covering Tiger Woods winning the Masters in 2019, what would your reaction be?
I still say this, and I know people want to, you know, argue the point, but I think it's one of the best comeback. I think it's the best comeback story in sports history. I mean, who can come back from physically what Tiger Woods has been able to come back from? You know, it's just absolutely incredible to me. And, you know, that debate was happening for just so many years. Even when he won five times in 2013, people still didn't think he was going to be mm-hmm. able to win a major. You know, so like this story has been going on for just so long. And, you know, and no one had the answers. No one knew if he actually was physically ever going to be capable of doing what he's doing again. And I said that on the Dan Patrick show earlier in the week. I think on Wednesday I was on the show and they asked me what the difference was in Tiger Woods this year compared to years past. And I said, honestly, the only difference is that this is the first time nobody's questioning his health. And I think that is when you understand he can go back to yep. being Tiger Woods again. You know what I mean? When the questions are no longer about, can your back hold up for four straight rounds? Can you do X, Y, and Z? No one knew, I don't think, before this year. And then his win in Atlanta, and then seeing what he's been able to do, you know, over the last year and a half, I think people really, this was the first major that you could say Tiger Woods could actually do it.
Sure, and no, obviously you've been right next to him on so many occasions. And, you know, for the typical fan who just sees him on TV, have you really been able to notice how much he's improved health-wise just in this last year, just when you talk to him? I mean, how he, you know, holds himself up and everything else. Have you seen a difference?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think everyone who's watched him on TV has seen the changes in Tiger Woods. You know, I think he is, last year at the Masters, what we talked about often and what he was being asked about often was how appreciative he was to be able to play golf at this level again, to be able to return to Augusta National, right? And then 12 months after that, the story kind of shifted to, hey, he's clearly still very grateful to be here, but now it's about winning. You know, now it's about, let's take that gratefulness and turn it into something even bigger. That to me was the story with him. And you could absolutely see that difference, you know, just in the way he carries himself and the way he talks about, you know, his game or his expectations and all of those things. I think as media, you know, when you're covering him, you can, I think it was very obvious to see that progress and that evolution from going from just being grateful to being there and not being on bed rest to now taking that and turning it into, okay, I'm back to being competitor, back to that winning mentality. You know, Justin Thomas told me early in the week on our on the Range show, right, he said, yeah, Tiger Woods has stopped giving me tips. You know, he has stopped giving me advice. And I loved that. You know what I mean? Because I guarantee you that's true. I mean, Tiger went from, we saw it all the time, him wanting to help out Justin Thomas and those Jupiter guys. And now he's like, yeah, you know what? we'll talk about that after the week's over. And yeah, I think those, to me, are the subtle changes that I think those
so
are the
let's back up
really
for a second. Talk me through your path to getting here. I know there was a stint at the PGA Tour, and prior to that, I'm sure some other stops as well. So what got you into broadcasting and what got you into golf broadcasting?
Yeah, I mean, I actually, it's like the best full circle story for me. I fell in love with broadcasting when I interned for CBS2 for the local CBS station in New York City when I was in college. And that actually is the same broadcasting station now that I go to record things for our CBS network shows, which is pretty amazing to walk back through those doors, you know, where I initially fell in love with sports television and to be able to walk through now as a member of the CBS sports team. You know, the first time I did that, I cried and was just like, this is crazy, you know, to be able to walk through the same building where it all kind of started for me. But yeah, I interned for CBS. I was the morning show intern for the New York station when I was a junior in college. And that's when I really knew I loved TV. I loved every part of TV. You know, I think if I were not in front of the camera, I would love to be a producer. I loved editing. I love everything that goes into putting together a story for viewers at home. I just think it's the coolest thing in the world. So I did that. And then after I graduated, I was a sideline reporter for Verizon 5's Channel 1 in the tri-state area. And then from there, got picked up by the MSG network. And then from there, I was doing pretty much every sport except for golf, you know, in the tri-state. And then got connected to the PGA Tour, moved down there in 2011, spent 5 years at PGAtour.com. And that's kind of where things went, where I thought things were going a little bit sideways for me. You know, 5 years in, I felt like I had really reached my ceiling there. I had done everything I could possibly do. No, you know, no other channels or networks were looking at me to, you know, pick me up. And I kind of said, okay, I'm going to go move. I need to go find somewhere else to be, you know, this isn't really working for my quality of life anymore. And literally right when I made that decision, like in my own mind, and didn't really verbalize it yet, Callaway Golf called me out of nowhere and said, what are your thoughts about moving to San Diego and working for us and helping us build our media production department, which again, I love the idea of just being a part of something from the ground up, and, you know, having that kind of freedom and having the chance to work under Harry Arnett, you know, and Chip Brewer, who I think are just amazing leaders. And I think I would say very few times in life do you get to really love your bosses, you know, and really look up to them as mentors. You know what I mean? I think that's just not a dynamic you get all the time. And I knew I wanted to learn from these guys at Callaway Golf, because I could just see how excited, you know, everyone that worked underneath them were, you know, to do their best and to experiment, you know, and try new things. So I just wanted to be a part of that culture. It just felt like that would be invigorating for me. So I was like, I moved out to San Diego, told my mom, all right, I'm quitting broadcasting and I'm going to work a Monday to Friday job, 8 to 5. I tried my hardest. it didn't work, and now we're going to go do something else. And about 3 months in, I got the call from Turner Sports, and they said, "Hey, you've done our digital coverage before on you know PGA.com for the PGA Championship. We'd love to promote you to our TNT coverage." and it, which was, you know, the hippie of me was like, "This is what I need to let go and let the universe."
It's amazing.
Its
wow.
I was trying too hard. I mean, it was wild. And then I from there, obviously, TNT and CBS were partners for the PGA Championship. So CBS was actually, Lance Barrow was the one producing me all week. And he was just the absolute best. Like, I was like a scared deer in headlights the entire week. I remember him telling me in my ear, like, "Do you want a chair? Do you want to sit down?" And I was like, "No, I'm fine," because I had so much nervous energy, because I knew this was kind of my moment to show that I could do this on a bigger stage. So I just remember, like, you know, those 3 hours of coverage, I didn't sit down once. I was pacing in nervous circles. He's in my ear trying to get me to relax. And it was, it was just incredible. And then, you know, kind of the rest is history from there. We all kept in touch, and, you know, Ross Molloy from CBS called me and said, "What are your thoughts? We have this thing called the Smart Cart, and we want to make it into something that kind of forwards the narrative a little bit more on a technology level for CBS Sports." He said, "Do you want to come to the Genesis Open in LA and give it a shot?" And it basically, it was like a live audition. And I said, "Yeah, let's do it." And we did it. And I got to join the CBS family. Yeah. So it was like, it was a crazy roundabout way.
You know, it's amazing. It's like you're telling a story about the universe and letting go. And it's amazing how many times you hear stories like that where people kind of stop, you know, pressuring themselves into kind of taking the next step. And in doing that, that's when the next step kind of presents itself. And it's kind of like, in a weird way, kind of like Tiger. I mean, it's right when Tiger was on some level written off, and he's like, "Well, I'm not going to really compete as a golfer anymore. I just want to kind of get back to having a healthy life and participating with my kids." And that's what, you know, opened the door for him to get this surgery and actually become a competitive golfer again. It's just, I don't know if you've ever noticed the strange similarity in your stories.
Yeah, you know, I tell people all the time, I'm just like Tiger Woods, you know? No, I mean, but I think that's like, sure. I think that's a life thing that everyone experiences on some level at some point. You know what I mean? Where I was putting so much pressure on myself and so much emphasis on the only thing that mattered in my life when I was at the PGA Tour. The only thing that mattered to me was advancing my career. And I spent no time taking care of myself, what made me happy, you know, the other parts of having like a well-rounded life. And the minute I realized I was making myself miserable because I couldn't, the people I wanted to meet with refused to meet with me. The people I thought, you know, the places I thought were the next natural step had no interest in me. And when that was my entire self-worth, was my career, I kind of realized I was in trouble, you know, and that's when I took a step back and said, okay, let's try and like maybe round out the other parts of life and see what happens, because I've tried my hardest. And I think that's the thing, when people say like, let go, and like the universe is going to take, you know, take it, it's going to do what it's going to do. That doesn't mean that you don't give it your best, right? I think if you give 100% effort, you're going to end up where you should be. You know what I mean? And it might not be where you think you're going to be. I certainly didn't think I was going to be working in the marketing department for Callaway Golf, you know, Monday to Friday job, but that's exactly what I needed at that time, you know, and it took me to a city that makes me happier than any place I've ever been in my life. So, it's interesting, but I do think everyone gets to that point where you realize, man, if I'm focusing all of my efforts and passion into just one part of life, you're going to be left wanting.
You mentioned the smart card, and I know we've talked about how, you know, being armed with stats when you approach a player after for a, you know, post round interview kind of helps. Could you talk about that a little, and you know, how you do deal with players coming off the course, especially if they've maybe, you know, had a tough day?
Yeah, I mean, players. Golf is mostly failure, right? I mean, golfers, every week they tee it up with the intention to win. And if they can win one time in a season, two times in a season, that's a hugely successful season. So I've kind of taken to, they understand that when I talk to them after a loss or whatever it is, I'm doing my job, and it's not to be hard on them. You know, it's not to make things worse. It's just, that's my job, and we're talking about what their job is. And I think, you know, we had to do that with Matt Kuchar just this last week at the RBC Heritage. And the thing to me is, yeah, he didn't step in the winner's circle, but it was still a hugely successful week for him. You know what I mean? Like, he's playing out of his mind right now. And so I don't think you necessarily have to take the tone of, oh, man, I know this was probably really rough. And yeah, I think if you set that tone, you're going to put the player in a whole different mindset as well. You know, I mean, to me, I was pumped to be able to talk to him again after another, you know, top five finish. And he already has two wins on the season. And how are you able to play at this type of level? And he did smile and said, you know, thanks for that. And I think we had a really positive interview, even though he wasn't the champion. So I think if you can take the statistics, and sometimes, you know, when it's a bad, you know, Francesco Molinari, for instance, you know, obviously he did not have the second nine he wanted at the Masters. But overall, again, he played out of his mind that week. I mean, he played so well, you know, the first three and a half rounds of the Masters. And when he walked into the room and I looked at him, I said, man, your scrambling was absolutely incredible today. And he broke out into a huge smile and laughed and said, yeah, it was. You know, and that's okay. Like, it sucks. Yeah, it sucks that you didn't win. We all get that. But I think if you're a competitor, you're an athlete, especially the ones that win a lot, they understand this is not the end all and be all. They're going to have other opportunities to put themselves in those positions. So let's just talk about what happened, you know, as honestly as possible. Let's use the stats to, you know, maybe bring out something that went wrong or something that could be done better or something you're proud of. And just talk about it, you know, as business as usual. It's not always the outcome you want, but that doesn't mean that we can't talk about it, you know, in a way that maybe viewers at home can learn from or still appreciate
how did that
what they just
sort
thought.
Of philosophy about how you approach an interview evolve? And I guess at what point in your career might you have approached it with, like, greater trepidation?
Yeah, I think it's just I think I've always had that. I'm a very positive person in general, and I'm a strong believer in you can take a positive out of any situation, no matter how bad it is. And honestly, the way I look at sports and sports broadcasting in general is, like, we're here to provide entertainment and an outlet for people, you know, from all of the negative stuff that's going on in the real world. Like, sports is not the real world. Sports is supposed to be a fun thing that takes people away from the bad stuff that's happening in their lives. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to watch the news and you want to watch, you know, if you want the real world, like, heavy stuff, you're not going to turn to sports for that. I think sports is meant to be uplifting. It's meant to be motivating. You know, I played sports my whole life, and I used it as an outlet to get away from whatever else was happening. You know what I mean? In my life. So I think that philosophy has started from a really young age for me as to what sports is supposed to be. And then just learning then how to cultivate that into the interviews, you know, it just, I think, has taken practice, because you never want to come off as flippant. You know, this is still these athletes' livelihood. But at the same token, no one died. You know what I mean? Like, this I think there has to be that balance there of maintaining what sports fundamentally is. So that's what I try to do is, hey, like, I get that this was not the outcome you wanted, and you might be down for a little bit, but on the flip side, look what you get to do for a living. You know what I mean? Like, look at where you are, and you still had a great finish. And what can we take from this that, you know, that might be able to be applied, you know, in the future? So I think it's always just figuring out that balance of not wanting to come off as, hey, this isn't important, because of course it's important, and it's hugely important to these players that, again, they're supporting their families and whoever, you know, whatever with what they do, and it's their passion. But also maintaining that balance of, hey, this is still sports and this is supposed to be fun and this is supposed to be really motivating and encouraging.
Is there an interview that jumps out at you, you know, where you were particularly nervous? I don't know, maybe it was that Genesis Open when you were doing the smart card for the first time, or talking to a specific player. Is there a memory of that, that, you know, a hurdle that you kind of had to get over? And now, because obviously you look so at ease on camera with all these guys, they obviously all know you, they've seen you a bunch, but was there a moment that you kind of had to get over?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always nervous. I'm like a nervous mess all the time. So it's like, that makes me feel good, you know, when people say I look at ease, because inside I don't always necessarily feel that way, you know, because you do have, you have two questions, three tops with players that really, you could go a whole lot of different directions with them, right? And you, and always to me, the struggle is what question is going to answer the question that most viewers at home want answered, right? So, I mean, that to me is always where I get the most nervous. You know, as someone like Tiger Woods is a great example of that, because, you know, everyone, most people at home want to hear what he has to say, but what is it that people at home want to hear most from him, right? So, then you're not going to make everyone happy. You know what I mean? That's just, that's unfortunately not part of the job. Is I'm still going to go on social media and still going to see people being like, that was the dumbest question you could have ever asked. And I honestly respect that, because I'll go back and I will look at it and be like, you know, could this have been better? Like, could I have gone a different direction or maybe flip flop the questions to make it more, you know, whatever. But I would say, that's the obstacle I've had to really fight through, is having confidence in myself that I'm asking the right questions with the right tone at the right time. And that has been definitely a work in progress, starting all the way back, you know, with PGAtour.com in 2011. I mean, one of my first sit down interviews when I worked for PGAtour.com was with Tiger Woods, for, you know, an EA Sports, for the night game that they were launching, and I got 15 minutes sit down interview with Tiger. And I just remember, and I actually told him this in a Q&A I did with him, I guess a couple last year, maybe at the Genesis, 2 years ago. I was so grateful that they were shooting our interview from the waist up, because from the waist down my legs were shaking uncontrollably. Like, I literally couldn't control my lower body. Like, I was shaking. I was so freaking nervous. But, you know, I think you have to go through those things to prove to yourself that you can do it, you know, because otherwise you can think you can do it all you want, but until you're actually in that situation, I think that's when you are able to realize, okay, I can handle this.
Well, you've built up again, you know, a good rapport with a lot of these guys. And I wonder, you know, how much is there off the air where you've, because you'll come on, you'll say, you know, we were just talking about this. You know, how much of that goes on before you go on the air with these guys? And also, how often is it that a player, you know, turns down doing a post-round interview?
Yeah, I mean, I would say we're extremely lucky in golf, because golf is such a unique sport in that they don't have to talk to us. Like, no golfer has to talk to you, you know? And for them to choose to talk to us, especially when things haven't gone right, I honestly don't think golfers get enough credit for that. It's because there are so many times where if I were them, I'd be like, no, I'm not talking to you. Like, I just had a terrible round. I have no interest in reanalyzing what I did not well today, you know, and they do, they still come and talk. So I think that's the first thing that I think a lot of people don't maybe realize at home is, like, every player has the choice to not talk. And I would say 98% of the time they choose to talk to us. They say, yeah, I'm going to do this for, you know, the viewers at home, you know, to whatever their reason is, they choose to do that, which I think is great. And for me, when players come in, you know, we don't have a ton of time with them before we go live on air, but I do try to just get a feel for, I think I know where I want to go with my questions, and I try to run it by them off camera in a conversational way. And sometimes they'll say something incredible Patrick Cantlay is a great example of this. When I interviewed him early week at the Masters, and he had a great round, and he said something to me like, yeah, you know, I birdied all these holes, but I forgot to birdie the easy one. And I was like, dude, you have to say that on air. That's so funny, you know? And, you know, it's, sometimes it's just little things like that where I'm like, you know, you kind of just glean really good nuggets, and it kind of points you in the right direction of where you want to go in the interview. So like that little time I have with players before we go live.
Amanda, what is your, you know, right now you're in the kind of the heart of the CBS schedule. So what is your schedule like in terms of travel, and what are you doing in the days leading up to actual tournament rounds?
Yeah, it varies every week. You know, with the new schedule this year, it's so fascinating because, as you guys know, we're so used to the same tournaments being during the same week that, like, I don't even really know what day or month mm-hmm. it is. I just say, oh, yeah, no, that's Travelers Week. Or no, that's mm-hmm. this week. And now we can't really do that this year. So I went to the airport yesterday and I was like, where are you going? And I had to look at my phone because I didn't remember what city I was going to. But it's, you know, depending on the week. Like this week I'm here and Zurich has asked me to be a part of their Pro-Am pairings party tonight. So I'll be there and hosting nice. That and then actually playing in the Pro-Am on Wednesday, which I'm really excited for. It's my first time playing in a Pro-Am. And then there are other weeks, like next week for Charlotte, I'm actually going to go back to my mom's in Florida and I'm going to, you know, do laundry and hang out with her for 4 days. And then I'll fly back up to Charlotte on Thursday, and then, you know, I'll walk the course, do all my prep on Friday, and then get ready to go Saturday, Sunday. So, you know, there's some weeks I'm here all week. There are some weeks I'm in Thursday through Sunday. It just kind of depends on what's happening.
How
around,
you said you're excited the playing in the Pro-Am. Are you nervous? How's the game? What are you looking forward to most, and what are you dreading the most?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm of course dreading the opening tee shot, right? Because you're like, just don't mess that one up. And just so people know that you can make contact with the ball. That's always like what I'm trying to prove is like, guys, it's not going to be consistent, but I promise sometimes it looks really great, but usually it doesn't. So here we are. So it's just like, you know, you want to have that impressive opening tee shot. I put a lot of pressure on myself, which is stupid. So I really focused this year on playing a lot more golf, but playing for fun. And if I get frustrated, I just pick up, I move on. And like, again, right, that's right. What we talked about, right? Sports are supposed to be fun. And especially if you're like an amateur player, it's so dumb to go out and do something that you're doing recreationally and to leave in a bad mood. Like, what is the point in doing that? So I've really been focused on just not having expectations with my game. Like, just go out there and have a good time and appreciate the fact that, like, I get to play in a freaking PGA Tour Pro-Am. That's awesome, right? Sure. Like, not many people get to say they get to do that. So just really appreciating the experience.
Alex is going to make fun of me because I'm a big believer in that type of thought process. He thinks I'm a little out there, but it's totally true. I feel like if you lower your expectations, you can't be disappointed.
No, I believe it. Yeah, sure.
Right. For me, I'm not a competitive golfer. I never have been. I never will be. You know what I mean? So what does golf mean for me? I think, you know, friends or get to meet people that otherwise I wouldn't meet. I just have to look at it in a different way than, you know, like Hallie Ledbetter. When I go out and play with Hallie, I'm like, yeah, you do you and try to get the best round. I'm going to be over here, like, checking out the snacks and the drinks and, you know, just seeing what fun shots I can learn today.
And so, I'll meet you at the green.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's interesting to play with friends that are obviously a lot better and have a different experience with the game that I do. But again, I think that's what makes golf so cool is that I can go out and play with her, who used to be a professional golfer, and I'm out here just trying to shoot 100, and we can still play together. Sure. Like, so I think that's really fun.
You know, I just want to ask one, because CT Pan just won, obviously, and I remember last year when you were interviewing him, I think at the Wyndham, and he kind of, yeah. his wife was caddying for him. He kind of threw her under the bus a little, and it was a pretty funny moment. Is that, I was going to ask you, what jumps out at you? Have you ever been shocked by something a player has said when you've done an interview with them?
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, CT Pan's was really funny, yeah. Because I knew he was kidding.
Right,
and his
sure.
sense of humor is so dry that I was like, oh God, like viewers are going to, some viewers are not going to take this as a joke at all.
Right.
Which is kind of when I stepped in and tried to make it obvious that it was right. a joke. You know how you're going to have to, you know, apologize. Yeah, I mean, sometimes there are just some players that will throw you a curveball, I think just for their own entertainment, like mm-hmm. just to see how you handle it. Which always cracks me up because, you know, I don't take myself too seriously. I don't think I can take myself too seriously. You have to be able to laugh, especially in live television. Nothing's ever going to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So when things happen unexpectedly, to me, those are the best moments. You know what I mean? I think those are the moments where viewers at home get a real feel for that player and how authentic they are and hopefully... for me too. So I would say, yeah, CT Panzo is a great example. I'm trying to think of other examples of something that's happened live on air where I'm like, oh geez. But you know, for the most part, it's just like little stupid stuff, you know what I mean, like getting attacked by birds with Justin Thomas on live television, which was not ideal.
Right.
You know, but it served as entertainment, so there you go.
Yeah.
I know also that you're very avid yoga practicer, yoga instructor,
yes.
I guess. So how does that mesh with your travel schedule and just your kind of daily routine?
Yeah. I mean, the great thing about yoga is you can take it anywhere. I actually travel with my yoga mat in my golf bag,
nice.
Which is like, yeah, it's like meant to be in there. You could probably even fit two yoga mats if you wanted to. But yeah, so I travel with my mat and you can do it anywhere. You know, I'll do it in my hotel room when I get back. If I'm feeling, you know, achy or sore, like I just haven't gotten enough movement in, you can do it in any hotel gym. So it's just a part of my fitness routine and it's fun. You know, it's fun playing with new inversions and you don't need a whole lot of space, you know, to learn how to stand on your hands or to do crazy things on your head. Like it's just, there's always something you can take further in yoga. Like you're never done, which is what I love about it, is that you can see progress but still have room to grow.
Sure.
Which is like the best thing about it to me. And it's you know, every week I'm just trying to discover new ways of like how to stay healthy and on track but still have fun in
sure.
the cities that we're in. It's such an interesting balance, especially like here in New Orleans. I just learned that I can get Whole Foods delivered to my hotel room.
Look,
which is awesome.
Nice.
So, you know, so I got like my meals kind of prepped for the week, but I also already know, okay, when am I going to have my beignets? That's going to be Sunday morning Cafe Du Monde before I go on TV. You know what I mean? So it's, it's just all part of like kind of that 360 balance health routine. And yoga is like the perfect thing to be able to take with you on the road because you just don't need a ton of space to do it. And it's so good for your mind and for your body.
We've had a lot of discussion in the office about yoga and what impact or how much it helps your golf. What's your take on how much it helps golf?
It is so important for golfers. I can't tell you how many PGA Tour players I've lectured about this and they laugh and they say, I know, and then they walk away. But I mean, here's the thing. Yoga is all about connecting your mind to your body, to your breath. What is golf about?
Sure.
It's about connecting your mind to your body, to your breath. So if you can figure out a way to calm down your mind, calm your mind, connect your breath to your body while with a calm mind on the golf course, your game is going to get better. And then, I mean, physically, for spinal rotation, for having a healthy back, for having, you know, strong and open hips, like all of these things that are really important for your golf game, that is what yoga is centered around. So it's, if that's like the one thing that people would take from, you know, what I try to do on the road on ways to help their golf game, like go find a yoga studio or go look at YouTube videos and, you know, shoulder openers, just getting more, you know, getting your shoulders to be stronger and more open and more flexible. All of these things are just, they're the fundamentals of yoga, but they're also fundamentals of golf.
Yeah, it's also, I find that, you know, what is kind of one of the main principles of yoga is like paying attention to how like certain positions and how things are supposed to kind of feel when you're doing it.
Yeah.
And what is golf? Like you're trying to get, you know, your left shoulder behind your head or whatever those things are. like paying real attention to specific fields is very similar to something that you're trying to do in yoga.
Yeah, I mean, proper alignment, right? You cannot do yoga safely without proper alignment and without proper stacking. And that's the same thing for golf. You know, if your knees aren't stacked properly, you know, if your hips and knees and ankles aren't all stacked properly, or your shoulders, like you said, aren't aligned in the right way in your, you know, in your backswing or when you're coming through, none of it's going to work. And it's the same, there's definitely that parallel there between yoga and golf. And like Jason Bone, when he had his heart attack, you know, years ago, I did a podcast with him a couple years ago. And the first thing he did after, you know, while he was getting healthy was start a yoga practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, yeah, it's the most beneficial thing I think any human being can do. But it is really important, I think, for golfers. And I think Rory McIlroy was talking about how he meditates.
I heard that. Yeah.
Mm. You know, so, I mean, think about that. Just being able to calm your mind and having control over your thoughts. It sounds like such a simple thing, but it's so difficult. And I think it's especially difficult on the golf course. So, I mean, all of these tools that you learn to kind of have a better quality of life are just going to help you on the golf course as well.
Well, this is all a sort of deep-rooted conspiracy to get Alex to start
taking up yoga.
So
I'm really sold, though. So I might have to give it a go.
Do it. You won't be disappointed.
Anyway, listen, I know you're very busy and you're very gracious with your time, so we both really appreciate it, and we very much enjoy your coverage on CBS and wish you the best of success. So thank you so much, Amanda.
Thanks, Amanda.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, guys.
All right, take
care.
You
got it.
See you.
Bye.
Thanks again to Amanda Baliones for joining us. Sam, any?
Well, I mean, the best thing is I think you said on air that you swear you're going to start taking up yoga.
I swear.
I think we got to go back, play the tape, Brittany. I think you said
Brittany asked me,
right.
And I am intrigued.
Because you missed Achille, but basically...
Is this why he came back up and was asking me about yoga?
Yes, because she made a very compelling argument about why it would help. And of course, Alex is so results-driven. He only wants to know if it's going to help his golf. And I
think
she absolutely will. She made a deeper argument about sort of your perspective on life and whatnot. But more importantly, she made a good point about how it'll allow you to perform better on the golf course.
Absolutely will.
We'll see.
Namaste, Amanda. Yeah.
All right. Some awards to finish out here. Best one-day story, Tiger Woods shows up to his own restaurant wearing the green jacket, also wearing Oakland Raiders shorts, sneakers. Looked like he'd just come from the gym wearing the mock shirt still. What'd you think of the whole ensemble?
I mean, if Sunday at the Masters wasn't confirmation that he's back, that outfit absolutely was. That was the best thing I've seen on the internet so far this year.
What I want to know is which part of the decision-making process went first. Was it, I'm going to wear my Raiders shorts and my shirt? Oh, I'll wear the green jacket. Or I'm going to wear my green jacket.
Right.
I definitely wear my green jacket tonight. What am I going to wear with it? I'm going to wear my Raiders shorts and my T-shirt.
Yeah. It was definitely a jacket.
I think he's going to build an outfit around the jacket.
Whatever.
I think if you're Tiger Woods and you just won the Masters in the way that you did, you're entitled to wear it any way you want, including wearing nothing at all underneath, although I think that would be in violation of several restaurant health codes. So.
And probably with Augusta National.
Probably. Ooh. I don't know that. I don't think
he's too worried about getting a note.
Suddenly
about
bumps
the Raiders
taking it to Krispy Kreme. Right. Suddenly gets bumped down in terms of infractions.
All right, this week in pros are just like us. We mentioned it before, but Dustin Johnson, bogey, 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 double bogey, double bogey, a.k.a. a good stretch for you.
It's not true. I was driving. By the way, I did play on Friday, and I'm playing with a guy. Alex and Killy are both familiar with my game, and I was striping it. For me, hitting it great, and the guy goes, what? No, he goes, what are you, a five?
No.
Really?
Yeah, and Charlie, I'm playing with Charlie.
Writing.
And this is a guy who's never played with you before?
Never played before. What are you, like
clearly.
Five?
Clearly.
Right.
Wow.
I'm like, no, I'm a 12. I'm like, I'm barely a 12. Like,
that's
I'm like a vanity 12.
You must have been hitting it pretty good.
I was hitting it great. Okay. So, and Charlie started laughing when I said that.
Must be nice to get on the course. Have you played yet this year?
Yeah, I went out on Friday. John had the day off, so we snuck out on Longshore, which I had not
Longshore's
played
Longshore's pretty good.
Yeah. John started out, speaking of bad golfers playing well, John started birdie par par.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. It's pretty solid.
It was
1 under through three.
I know. And I was like 2 over through three. And he's like, this is how it's going to be from now on.
Wow.
I was like, oh, cute.
I still haven't played yet. And I went to the range on Friday at like 5:15, and there was a sign that said the range is closing at 5 due to wet conditions. A range closing due to wet conditions.
Wait, like a turf range?
Yeah.
Like Sterling?
Yes. No, the Griff.
Oh.
Unbelievable.
Daggers.
So I'm off
Sorry to
a
hear that.
Brutal start to the season. All right, someone who's not off to a start to the season, and this is our stat of the week. Someone's not off to a bad start to the season is Tiger Woods, obviously. This stat comes from Justin Ray at 15th Club. Tiger is 32 under in the last three majors combined. That's three shots better than anyone else in that span. The 32 under in a three-major stretch is actually Tiger's best since 2006 when he won the Open, won the PGA, and then finished second at the Masters in 2007.
That's nasty.
So this is like incredible
stuff.
That
was a hard Masters. That was, like
that was a brutal Masters. That was a Zach Johnson. Exactly. That was a really tough one. The other stat that's been floating around with Tiger is he leads the tour in greens in regulation, and his number this year, it's 76.2, I believe, is actually higher than a couple of his choice years, including 2000. So, I mean, he's really – this is prime peak almost level Tiger.
I mean, if you were going to say, you know, what is the thing that gives you the most level of optimism about Tiger's game, I would say the fact that he's hitting so many fairways and giving himself looks at so many greens, like he can contend – I mean, again, I don't want to go over crazy, but he can contend every week if he's driving as well as he is, because he's such a good iron play, he's going to have looks in, you know, so many greens.
All right, let's get to the Zurich Classic, which first let's – you know, obviously this is the two-man team event. I know – you know, Joel and Chris Powers for us kind of did a little back and forth on it. They both said it needed some work, this event. Now, again, a couple years ago when it was changed, everybody praised it because, you know, there's so many golf events that run together. Sam, where do you stand on it right now?
Well, I think, you know, one of Joel's points is, or I think it was maybe Powers' points, is that the field is not that spectacular, but that's I think that's 100% a byproduct of the schedule and the fact that
this
it's just someone's
got
to take
people
got to take weeks off. I think it's great. I think when you, as a fan, when you decide to turn on a golf tournament, it's for one of two reasons: who's leading, or who's in contention, who I want to watch on Sunday afternoon, and also like what has the potential to happen that's going to be exciting. And this that on the second front, this is a very exciting format. It's unique. It's different. Mm-hmm. It's the golf that, you know, we all play. And so I love it. The fact that, you know, it might be, you know, a CT Pan-esque player, PGA Tour package of mediocrity, I'm not
just
saying.
Random daggers.
I'm kidding. But I'm just saying, like, that we can't control that. But the fact that it's this exciting format, I don't care who it is, I would be intrigued to watch it on Sunday afternoon.
It's more interesting than the old format.
I mean, 100%.
Sure. Yeah, no, I agree for sure. What do you think, Keels?
I agree, and I think it's, you know, talking about Masters fatigue, like I don't need another 72 hole stroke play
individual
event right now. Like I need this. I don't care who's playing.
Any thought on who you like to win this week?
I saw Tony Finau and Kyle Stanley were 18-1.
That's who I was looking
at.
No. Yes. Great minds.
Love it.
That's a good one. I'm also always interested in the Brooks Koepka, Chase Koepka.
Always.
Everybody picks their kind of good friends. Brooks just picks his little brother. And
like,
they actually
like
finished,
that.
I think, fifth place one of these years. So, you know, Brooks could probably pick you or I and still kind of contend.
Probably.
He's that good. No, obviously, Chase Koepka is a pro.
Obviously,
also.
He's much good. Better than
he's
us.
He's much better than us.
Also, can we please address that Sam just, like, got up and
Sam
left?
Sam just left. Like, so this is a podcast first. Sam is gone, so we will not get a pick from him. But Keely and I both like Finau, Kyle Stanley. Sam apparently had something more important
to
do.
The sound of a door closing was
Brittany,
actually
our producer, grabbing the door. Sam couldn't even be bothered to, you know, gently close the door.
We have like 30 seconds left and he's just out.
Yeah.
Like,
we were told 3:00. It's not even 3 yet.
Point taken, Sam. Jeez Louise.
Anyway, all right. That was fun.
But yeah, no, I like the Brooks combination too.
Okay. All right. Well, Keely, that was fun. We could just hang out here all day, but
might as well.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks
to Sam,
I guess, for being here for part of this. Thanks to our producer, Brittany, as always. Thanks to Amanda Baleonis for joining us. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already. And check back next week to see who our guest is.